people get almost bored. I mean, it's like bad hombres. Exactly. Hombres. It's almost like we'd rather talk about bad hombres than talk about, you know, student loans.
Hey, welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm your host, Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa. With me in our Harlem studio is Sandra Lilly, managing editor of NBC Latino. Welcome, Sandra.
Hola, mi gente.
And also with me in Harlem, we have Aaron Morrison, senior staff writer at Mike.com. Welcome back to the show, Aaron.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
And finally, joining us from Chicago, near Wrigley Field, who knows, our very own Maria Hinojosa is a guest today. Hey, Maria.
Hey, I'm so not cool in Chicago because I'm not wearing anything that says Go Cubs.
All right. Well, it's great to have all three of you here today. So let's just start. The debates are finally over.
Yay.
And we have 2 weeks until Election Day. And I feel like it's a good time to take a breath and reflect on the last few weeks. So our producer, Noam, and I were looking at some of our reviews on iTunes, and a few of them stood out to us. So this is Califori, who writes, "It lacks political diversity, a left-leaning podcast." And Hey9000 writes, "Just a liberal echo chamber, not even pretending to see things in a balanced way." And you know what? Like, looking at those reviews, I'm going to say it's kind of a valid criticism. The last few weeks, it's been really hard to present things in a way that examines both candidates the same in a traditional political journalism world. But as a journalist, I feel like we have overlooked Hillary Clinton the last couple of weeks. And I think we've talked about some of the reasons why when you have an over-tweeter like Donald Trump. But let's just talk a little bit about Clinton, the campaign. I just feel like if I don't, like, the political journalist in me, like, I can't go to bed at night.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Clinton, Aaron? Do you think voters are excited about her? I know, like, in terms of the primary and the general, like, where do you think this is all standing now?
We certainly are at a place where many voters are feeling like, okay, well, if I can't, you know, if I can't support Trump, then I'm going to have to support Clinton. And if I don't support Clinton, then I might be helping Trump where he, you know, where it's tighter than we normally expect it should be at this point, given all the things that have come out about Trump. So Clinton, in my opinion, needs someone out there. I mean, as far as a journalist, connecting the dots, the dots for me start where we saw a memo come out of the DNC telling surrogates and lawmakers not to engage communities, protesters, Black Lives Matter folks on specific policy agenda when it comes to sort of that that part of the electorate. So then you move to the DNC, where she's got the mothers of the movement on the stage.
Hillary Clinton isn't afraid to say that Black Lives Matter. Not only did she listen to our problems, she invited us to become a part of the solution.
Then you move to recently, where it seemed like throughout the three debates, we had no talk of criminal justice, no real talk about criminal justice.
We had a lot of talk about the inner city, where I think every person of color lives in the general debate now in the inner city, right? I
mean, right. So and we all know that that is not
true.
But so then you move past these debates and you're like, okay, well, what happened to these issues? Hillary Clinton, where are they? You were talking about them in the primary race when you needed to win South Carolina and Georgia and all these other states where there are, you know, large Black and Latino populations, but you're not talking about it now. So why should we still support you? Even though we aren't going to support Trump, this is what voters might say. Why should we go out and pull the lever for you? And I think she has not really stated that case really well.
Futuro Media Group went to North Carolina, young Black millennials who don't want to vote.
I think it's problematic to be guilted into voting because guilt long term does not create substantive change.
You know, as much as people say, it's like when you have 30 years of history with the 1994 crime bill.
Yep, exactly.
In terms of incarceration, we just are seeing this amazing documentary on Netflix called 13th.
So good.
And I will plug that for free anytime. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on, Sandra, here.
Yep.
And I guess the question is, has the campaign, they reached to the point where they understand that by moving to the center, they might have sort of ignored sort of parts of the Democratic Party that have been more vibrant, in the progressive movement in during the primary season? And is it become just like, we're going to win, we're going to beat Trump, and then we're going to worry about everything. We're going to come back to these issues later.
I'd answer it in a different way. I think that when you saw her campaign and you saw her, especially when she had the bitter primary fight with Bernie Sanders, trying to say, I've come to that point, I've learned my lessons, I've learned from Bernie, trying to bring it to the fold. Where I do sometimes feel, as a journalist, very guilty is that because, again, Trumpito has sucked the oxygen out of the room, I feel, and that's all we've done is sort of react to the shock of Trump. I do feel like we haven't had enough coverage in all of our media on these very valid issues. For example, the millennial vote among the eligible Hispanic electorate is 44%. That's a lot of voters. And have we done, I think we need to do more stories. In fact, I was talking to a fellow journalist yesterday that said, we'll probably end up doing it after the election instead of before. Right. In other words, like how, when she says, when Hillary Clinton says she's going to do immigration reform in the first 100 days, that's a big deal. Will she be able to do it? What are the setbacks? What are the problems, the criticisms that she's had when it comes to immigration policy? But it's almost like instead of having them now, it's almost like we're already saying, we'll do it afterward because now it's all about Trump. So it's really been, I think it's been a challenge. I don't think we've done as much as we should, hitting on policy points. And I think a lot of it is we've all been just razzle dazzle. What do we do with Trump?
Maria, what do you think?
I'm actually getting really excited about what's going to happen in the first 100 days of whoever is the next president, because then I want to see the kind of pressure that's going to be coming from, community-based organizations, people who are going to push on policy. And that's going to be like, in a way, revving back up our democracy beyond the voting part of it. And so I'm actually getting really excited because, like, all right, let's just say Latino voters are, in fact, like, crucial. What is she going to do in those first 100 days? Oops. Mm-hmm. I guess I just said there's a prediction that Hillary Clinton might win.
So, Aaron, going forward, how do you think Hillary Clinton's going to respond to the issue of criminal justice reform?
Well, I think you can approach this two ways as a journalist. If you're going to ask Hillary, so what are you going to do if we put you in office? What are you going to do on these issues? You can ask her that question. You can have people ask her those questions through a story. You can also hold sort of activists accountable for having pushed this issue to sort of a national prominence. This is now a global movement.
Right.
But you can't now drop the ball now that you've got.
Like, this is the moment. And
this is the moment. Right. Black Lives Matter is a household name. So how do you take that and harness it into actual sort of lobbying efforts and holding, politicians accountable for the policies that you believe should and would change some of the narratives and the disparities that exist in this country?
A recent CBS News YouGov poll has Trump only 3 points ahead of Clinton in Texas. Texas.
It's
and a separate poll shows Clinton up by 5 points over Trump in Arizona.
In Arizona, I know.
With 20% of likely voters still undecided. So I can't even believe I'm asking this question to Sandra, but I'm going to ask it. And then I'm going to have this conversation. So Sandra Lilly, could Arizona and Texas really turned blue in 2016? And is this all due to the Latino vote?
Well, I have to say, listen, I don't have a crystal ball. And, we always are a little shy about being the one saying this and that. But we had a great story by Stephen Nuño, our political analyst. And one of the things that he was talking about is he starts out with the fact that, yes, it's true that there have been historical reasons in Arizona why the Latino vote has sometimes been low. Frankly, a lot of it externalities that have been done on the community that have not allowed them to vote. But is this year different? You betcha. You betcha, to quote Sarah Palin. It is absolutely true that voter registrations are through the roof. That we're talking to the community organizations out there who are saying we're seeing a level of excitement, registration, early voting. We're seeing it in Texas. We're seeing the numbers in Florida. We're seeing the numbers in Arizona. So could it tip it? We'll see what happens, on election day. But I definitely think that the numbers are going to be more surprising than we thought even a month and a half ago when, right. you know, Pew Hispanic was worried that there wouldn't be the excitement in 2016 that there was in 2012. Somehow I think there's been a momentum.
Right. And before I bring in Maria, the context that you brought about Florida was our good friend Adrian Carrasquillo from BuzzFeed. Yes. And this is what he says. Hillary Clinton's campaign is touting a substantial 99% increase in Latino voting in Florida compared to this point in 2012. With 133,000 Hispanics already casting their ballot in the state. Maria Hinojosa, when you hear something like that, what do you want to say? Like, what is that? What does it mean to you?
Well, so I actually, in all of the years that I've covered presidential elections, I've never become as obsessed as I am now with Florida.
Yeah.
We don't know, right? We won't know until the day after the election. But if this is the case, wouldn't it be amazing if, in fact, we are able to have the headline of Latino, Latina mm-hmm. voters transformed the state of Florida, which allowed Hillary Clinton to win this election? And if it turns out that it is because of these Latino, Latina voters, we've said this before, right? But it's the big moment, you know, come to Jesus moment for the Republican Party. Yeah. How do they recuperate from this?
I've always had this, like, fascination with the fact that I'm convinced that it is Latinos who will transform the Republican Party. I've always felt that we saw it happen the day after Trump did the campaign. I think most of us here would agree that among the first Republicans to say, what the heck, and I don't know if I can support him, were a lot of establishment Republicans
yes.
that we've covered for years.
Latino establishment. That, yeah,
yeah Latino establishment Republicans that frankly said, this is untenable. And I've always been fascinated by that because I think this election will point to two things, not only, you know, more involvement and the fact that there are, you know, times when historically the way it happened with Harry Reid, you know, Hispanics have gone out and when someone has been anti-immigrant or more racist on one side, they've supported the other candidate. But I think that it'll say a lot about how, like what Maria just said, the Republican Party just has to get its act together when it comes to Latino voters.
I'm sticking to the prediction. Maria can make fun of me. I don't care. Historic numbers are going to come out November 8th, and the Cubs are going to win the World Series, too. So there, I got both of those on record, and everyone can make fun of me with it when they do the iTunes review. Hey, In the Thick is still on the front page of iTunes under Election 2016 and Political Favorites, and we continue to be ranked among the top podcasts under News and Politics. This is because we're growing as a show, but also because of our listener engagement. Your contributions truly make a difference and help us continue providing a diverse and authentic voice not heard anywhere else. If you can, I hope you will go to inthethick.org and click on the donate button. And one more thing. We're currently conducting a survey to learn a bit more about our listeners. You can also find it at inthethick.org, and it'll take only minutes. Thanks. We've been talking a lot about potential blind spots in this show. So, Sandra.
Sí, señor.
What do you think in this election cycle in particular? Has the media sounded like they've been rooting for Hillary to win?
You know what? I've reflected on sort of this a lot because, you know, we all take it really seriously. And here's where I net out. I think that there's a distinction to be made between the way we cover the folks, for example, that are voting for either Hillary or Trump or Johnson or Stein and give everybody their due respect with the difference of how the candidates are doing and how their campaigns are going. And I think that for those of us in Latino media who started out by, you know, talking about him being a birther years ago to the way he started, let's face it, his campaign last year with Mexicans are rapists, it's tough. And also the fact that a lot of what he said has not been true. We have to make a distinction. It's hard to cover someone like Trump the way you would cover, let's say, Mitt Romney, who I mm-hmm. covered in 2012. But I hope that we've given enough respect to the voters.
You know, the mainstream media bent over backwards when Donald Trump was beginning his campaign, when they bent over backwards to treat him like a serious, you know, candidate. And what has Donald Trump done, you know, a year and a half later is he's come back to say that the media, every single one of us are, you know, horrible people who do horrible work and that we're full of lies. The same media that gave him a spot is the same media that he has now come and turned on. But again, that's not the narrative that's coming out of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Yeah. It's coming out of the Trump campaign.
But the Clinton campaign actually went and did this too, Maria. I mean, let's bring up the WikiLeaks, as I call it. in an email, Clinton advisor Christina Casa wrote that the plan for Latino outreach is to, quote, call out the Republicans for their rhetoric rather than leaning on policy positions.
I think, listen, it's unfortunate, right? But we all know that sometimes it's like, hey, we stop at the car accident, right? It's the negative stuff that happens. I think if you want to do a quick thing, I think it's sometimes much easier to do the, you know, the negative. Can you believe this guy is saying that than to actually do the other stuff? But I also think that part of what has made it so difficult, I think it's been difficult for journalists. I have never worked in a political campaign and won't, but I'm just saying I can imagine it's also very difficult in a political campaign to make that pivot, because it's almost like, okay, let's confession here. I think we talked about this in a previous podcast. When you're looking at the debate and Trump throws one of these crazy, crazy grenades, after a while, when they start talking about policy stuff, people get almost bored, right?
I mean, it's like bad, it's everyone's talking about like, bad hombres.
Exactly. Hombres. It's almost like we'd rather talk about bad hombres than talk about, you know, student loans. It's a horrible thing to say. But I think that has also affected the way, you know, campaigns are talking to people, the way canvassers. I mean, look at all the speeches. Mm-hmm. I mean, right? They're basically anti-Trump speeches from the Clinton camp.
You know, one of the things that I heard in my travels, and I'm not going to name the city because I think they'd be upset, but in a southwestern city, the public radio news director actually was getting phone calls. He was getting calls from his listeners saying, you know what, you're treating Trump too well. You're giving him too much credibility. We expected something different from this kind of level of journalism. And I found that very interesting. You know,
that is interesting.
Yeah. I've also heard at least one journalist saying, you know, the most patriotic and responsible thing that I could do is to make sure that Donald Trump does not get elected because he is against freedom of the press.
I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
Our job as journalists actually should be to call that out and to raise flags around that. Now, this poses all kinds of really challenging questions for us as journalists. What is the role of American journalists? Is it to say, well, you know what? We're going to take this, explicitly racist comment and we're going to somehow say that this is now normal to talk this way. We have now been put into that position, and we're just human beings, right? I mean, people who are making these decisions at the New York Times, at CNN, you know, wherever they are, they're just human beings, and they're making calls on stuff that we've never had to face before. And I'm not sure that we even have had the time to convene a group of journalists and have a conversation about our ethical role. We haven't had time this entire election season.
Aaron, what do you got?
If we're upset or are concerned about Trump's position on the freedom of the press, let's talk about his position on voting rights, where he's telling voters at his rallies to, go out to the polls and
look for fraud. Go to Philly and check the inner city where the brown people are.
I'll bring up the Matt Visor Boston Globe story that there was a supporter that says, I'm looking for Syrian refugees and people that don't speak American. But Aaron, what's your take on how journalists should be covering this election season?
I kind of fall in the camp of needing to give journalists a break for the way we have covered Trump versus Clinton. I mean, think about it. Mm-hmm. Every time we could move on to serious issues, we had to deal with another sort of allegation that he sexually assaulted someone, or we had to deal with another comment.
Or the 3 a.m. tweet storm about Alicia Machado.
Exactly. So there is an element of wanting to make sure that, you know, we take voters' concerns seriously, but then we had to split our time between all of these other issues that had absolutely nothing to do with a person's knowledge and qualifications for running the country. Now, obviously, a lot of people would think sexual assault allegations should disqualify you from running for president. However, and there isn't really no but. I think you should have serious concerns about the things that Trump has been accused of. We need to get back to talking about the issues that really galvanized a lot of voters to sort of either get behind Bernie or get behind Clinton. and those issues that that galvanize people to get behind Trump. We can't get to those things because there's too much of garbage.
Here's also why I think it's so important. I'm echoing here what Aaron says. When Julio, when you had mentioned what your podcast listeners said, and all of us here have covered other elections and other races. In 2012, we were doing, for example, at NBC Latino, like an incredibly, I remember just like doing so many interviews with I remember talking to Romney's sons who speak perfect Spanish. I remember doing a lot of stories about the issues. What do both parties want to do with college debt, with this and that, with home ownership? Like I remember saying, we haven't had a chance to do that because, again, these grenades that have been thrown. And isn't the job of journalists also to expose the things that we consider to be the bad isms, right? Racism, sexism. Isn't that part of the job that we do? So if you have a candidate that's embodying this, we're frankly doing what we're supposed to do.
I mean, if you think about facts, right, do you think that at every time that Donald Trump is quoted, like in a piece in the New York Times or cited on NPR or on the evening news, that, you know, that at every point where he's mentioned, you would have to make a qualifier. You'd have to make a statement.
Like what the HuffPost does.
Yes. A statement based on fact that could change. Right. You know, today Donald Trump said so and so in so and so place, and tomorrow he's going to be. And, you know, and you should know that Donald Trump has been accused by, you know, 10 women of sexual assault, period. Next story, you know, or and you should know that Donald Trump has openly advocated for, you know, a Muslim ban, whatever it is, something that is factual that qualifies him. And then I'm like,
but isn't that exactly what white Americans in the middle of the country think that the East Coast elite is saying? I mean, as East Coast media, do we have a responsibility to go against that stereotype?
Well, I think there are plenty of things that Clinton needs to be challenged on. And we should be asking for more specifics when it comes to some of her plans around criminal justice reform, education, any number of issues that are important to a whole broad swath of voters. But we're sort of stuck in this pattern where we get close to addressing real issues and then another bombshell comes
out. All right, so let's move on to our closing segment, Noam's Family List. Since we've been featured on the front page of iTunes the last couple of months, thank you, iTunes, we've gotten a bunch of new listeners. So for all you new listeners out there and new reviewers, this is a segment where we ask guests to choose from a list of possible options, a list our producer Noam just happened to brainstorm over dinner while visiting his family. We've got 5 choices, which you're about to hear. And if you have any ideas of more choices you'd like to hear, tweet them at us at In The Thick Show. Here's what we've got. Let me get my TV announcer voice on. Fantasy CNN. What's missing? Tough questions. What we've got wrong. And one of our favorite suggestions from Twitter, La Chancla. This is where you pick something or someone from this week that messed up so much that they might deserve to get a sandal, La Chancla, thrown at them. So Maria, what's your choice?
I think what's missing is the conversation about actually going back to our families, going back to our communities, you know, turning off the constant social media. I'm all about kind of what's missing is, I hate to say it, but kind of getting back to basics of who we are, of what matters to us. And yes, even connecting with people with whom we may disagree with politically, but somehow trying to find a place of common ground. And maybe, like I said, that means turning off and walking away from the cable news to try to find some positivity.
Aaron, what do you got?
I'm going to echo Maria's What's Missing and shout out my colleague, Zach Cheney Rice. He wrote a piece this week about his white aunt being a Trump supporter and how he's had to have a conversation with her about being her black nephew. Whoa. And feeling like she's about to vote for someone that is opposed to his progression, his liberty, and his right to sort of enjoy all of the spoils of this country we call America. So I would say what's missing is more conversations about how we're talking to our relatives who do disagree with us in these elections.
And that's on Mike.
That is on Mike.
And that's Zach Cheney Rice, another one of our favorite In the Thick guests. Sandra, which one are you going to choose?
Come on, Julio. I'm a Boricua mom. You know which one I'm going to go? No,
you know,
I'm just
it's
kidding.
Funny. Before you're going to choose La Chancla, but it's so funny. I want to get this on the record of In the Thick. that la chancla has become such a popular choice, and all the Latinas have chosen la chancla, I believe. Ay,
so anyway, so predictable. Sorry. No, but you know, this one I actually say from the heart. La chancla for me was sort of like at the end of last week, this past weekend, when again, you know, Trump had mentioned about not being able to maybe accept the results after the last debate. I think anything that talks about rigged gives me the heebie-jeebies as a journalist, a patriotic American, because I think that, again, you know, to quote what Maria was saying before, you know, we sort of all are looking forward to the next chapter when we can talk about issues, when we can talk about how our kids going to pay for student loans, when we can just sort of get into the process of rebuilding. So I really mean it. I feel like a chancletazo to those that are already saying rigged before an election has happened. I think it's dangerous. And I think it's part of you know, our journalistic creed to sort of call that out, say you can't be saying that things are rigged when they haven't even happened. It's not good for democracy. And I think chancletazo to anybody who is going around saying that.
We're just going to have to get custom-made chanclas in the thick. And mine is what's missing. And I don't know if you guys saw this, and this is a story from the Tennessean. I think it was last week. But the Corrections Corporation of America, we all know who they are, the private prison company, and if people don't know, they run private immigration detention centers that are contracted with the Department of Homeland Security through ICE. They just extended a contract with ICE, and as according to the Tennessean, is a positive sign for the troubled company. But this is really interesting that people aren't really talking about, and talk about an issue that it did not even, I mean, you want to talk about the debate, didn't even like become a debate question or anything. The CCA CEO, who is Damon Hininger, he never talks to the media. Like, whenever you try to get him, he was more than happy to get on a conference call to say it's notable with this ongoing review about the DHS. The 18th of October, we are announcing the extension of a contract. We think we have a great, great story to show what we've done historically, and they've come down to the same conclusion. We've been a really, really, really good tool for ICE. So there you go.
I would suggest he watch 13th, the documentary.
Watch, well, I don't know if he has it on. He might have got it geolocated blocked on Netflix.
Uno, dos, tres.
Sandra Lilly, managing editor of NBC Latino, Aaron Morrison, senior staff writer at Mike.com, and Maria Hinojosa, thank you for joining me on In the Thick.
Thank you, Julio. Talk to you next week.
I'm your host, Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa. And remember, go to iTunes to rate and review us. It really helps. Follow us on Twitter at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. We're also on Instagram at In the Thick Show. And tell your friends at your next dinner party, please. Our producer is Noam Hassenfeld. Our senior editor is Nadia Raymond. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. Some of our music is composed by Noam. And the other music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Records. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. See you around. Nos vemos.